Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. I must confess, very much looking forward to today's conversation with a doctor who I think you're going to find very, very interesting. Recall a few months back, many of us were taken aback by a study that claimed that fish oil was bad for you. We've always been taught to believe that fish oil is incredibly beneficial, but this study suggested that men who took fish oil were at higher risk of prostate cancer. Well, I've never seen such a vociferous reaction from the natural health community. So many people wrote eloquent rebuttals to that, and I, of course, wrote a blog, and I devoted several radio programs and podcasts to demolishing that study. But the issue still keeps coming up, and it's kind of like, how do you dispel bad news? It's very hard. Once the reputation of a person or a supplement is tarnished, a lot of people are wary. And so today we've invited a physician who has some very special qualifications. You know, when I review a study, I rely on my expertise, what I learned in medical school, and my own critical faculties to poke holes in the study. But today we're going to talk to Dr. Jay Udani. Dr. Udani is uniquely qualified to critique studies because that's sort of what he does for a living. He is a certified physician investigator for clinical trials, and he has designed and or performed more than 150 clinical trials. So he really knows his stuff when it comes to statistics and the way that trials are set up. It's very complicated. And so we're going to turn to him. He is founder and CEO of something called Medicus Research. That is the premier contract research organization for the natural health products industry, including botanical drugs, dietary supplements, functional foods. His background is that he's a board-certified internist. He served as chief resident at the prestigious Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Hospital to the Stars in Beverly Hills. He performed a fellowship in integrative medicine at Cedars-Sinai in UCLA, one of the few integrative medicine programs among American hospitals across the country. And he is recognized as one of the key opinion leaders in the field of integrative medicine. So without further ado, welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, Dr. Udani. It's a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about this particular trial. But by the way, the background is I can recall the very moment when I heard about this trial. You know, some people could say, you know, where were you during the, you know, when Kennedy was assassinated, or where were you? But I know exactly. I was actually lying in bed, and I had my iPad poised on my lap, and I was doing some little reading before bed, and I looked at the Drudge Report, and there was this headline in the Drudge Report. You know, the Drudge Report has all these lurid headlines, and it said, "Fish oil can cause prostate cancer." And I said, "Oh my God, you know, it's like, it's 11:30 at night, and people are going to bombard me in the office tomorrow, and I better, you know, get on the case here and figure out what's wrong with this study, because otherwise, my goose is going to be cooked, and people will be calling me on a radio program." And so I had to spend hours and hours pouring through these, you know, frankly, for me, boring details of some of this, you know, these studies. But this is what you do for a living. So help us out.
That's right. Not boring for me, but it's good. This is very interesting. And thank you for the introduction there. The key for this particular study and the framing conversation, the fact that it appeared on Drudge Report, you know, validates my hypothesis that if you can show that a food or dietary supplement can kill someone, you can get it published much more easily than if you can save lives. And we've mm-hmm. been on the receiving end of that sort of a publication bias.
But it's sort of like, I mean, frankly, these days it's sort of like, you know, dog bites man versus man bites dog. You know, we hear so often that supplements are beneficial. So after a while, the press gets bored with it. The news storyline is, you know, you idiots, the supplements that you're taking that you think are making you healthy, they actually may be killing you.
Yes. Well, it certainly grabs the attention. This particular study, or actually I'm going to reframe that, this particular paper, and I'm going to call it a paper because, in fact, this was not a study. This was a paper taking data and blood samples from a totally different study. And in fact, I was one of the investigators in that original study. It was called the SELECT study, the selenium and vitamin E trial, looking at, I think, 30,000 men longitudinally given either selenium and vitamin E or placebo and looking at prostate cancer. So that was the actual study that was performed. They happened at the beginning of the study to collect blood from each of the men. And at this particular paper, 10 years after the study started, went back and took that blood, defrosted it, and analyzed it for omega-3 and omega-6 content under the hypothesis that perhaps there's some statistical correlation between those levels and the people who develop prostate cancer. So to be clear, this study did not give men fish oil, did not give them omega-3 dietary supplements, did not ask them, do you take supplements, did not ask them, do you eat fish, merely measured their baseline levels and then did a matched cohort control to say, okay, out of the 2,000 roughly men who developed prostate cancer who were being followed during this time, try to find people who were roughly the same age, same ethnic background, race, and say, okay, for those who got it and those who didn't, can we isolate variables that might connect the dots there to why these people got it or not? And they found that if you statistically got prostate cancer, that there was a higher likelihood that your baseline omega-3, omega-6 levels back when you originally started the study were higher than those men who didn't. Now, there's so many problems with that sort of statistical correlation. There's clearly no causation there at all. The same study acknowledges that in their statistical analysis, they found, well, if you have a high PSA at baseline, that also correlates with you developing prostate cancer. If you have a first-degree relative with prostate cancer, that correlates.
So what you're saying, Dr. Udani, is that you know, it's the old saying in science, correlation is not causation. I mean, you could say, for example, that, you know, there always seems to be, whenever there's a fire, a researcher could note that there's always an extraordinary prevalence of people running around with raincoats, with hoses. And, you know, the casual observer could say, you know, whenever those guys show up, a building burns down. So maybe what we should do is we should close the firehouses because that always seems to be associated with destructive fires. Is that a proper analogy for what may be happening in the study?
Yeah, it's an outstanding analogy. This is really just that. There's no smoking gun here. It was a backward-looking analysis. They were fortunate to have this data. And there's so many challenges to tying the two together. So first of all, the blood was drawn anywhere from 1 to 10 years before these individuals developed prostate cancer. So it would be the equivalent of if you have, you know, some sort of condition today and I ask you, okay, what did you have to eat 10 years ago? Because that could have affected a blood level that I drew then randomly, and I'm trying to correlate the two together. There's no correlation. Maybe people change their diet. Maybe people who are at higher risk for prostate cancer were already eating healthier because they knew they had a relative or some other risk, and they were trying to, you know, beat the odds by doing these healthier things. So none
but
of this
that
is
actually
possible.
Is an important point that you mentioned is that, you know, that sometimes, I mean, there actually have been some vitamin studies where, you know, people who take vitamins, you know, they have more disease. But it could be, you know, reverse causation is that people who, because they have a family history or because they're already, you know, coming down with health problems, that they may be more motivated to take things that are healthy.
That's correct. And a lot of times, you know, we look at in integrative medicine, you know, things aren't black and white. Disease is not like one day you don't have it and one day you do. There's a spectrum. There's a length of time during which you are developing this condition. And one thing I always hypothesize is that people who are doing the right thing. So people take their vitamins or fish oil or whatever, and they say, Doc, but I did everything you said, and I still got X. And my response is, well, it's possible you might have gotten X sooner, and maybe you expanded your health span in terms of, you know, actually getting to the disease or the severity of the disease or these sort of things. And so it's not possible to know, but certainly in this case, you know, this paper and all the headlines from it are really, there's no way of tying it to fish oil intake or fish consumption. It was merely an observation at a single point in time, and then followed these folks at a later date and said who got prostate cancer, who didn't. By the way, out of the 30-something thousand men who were in this study, they only analyzed data for about, you know, 2,000 individuals with prostate cancer and another 4,000 who did not have. So you're ignoring fully two-thirds of the entire data set that's available, and they acknowledge in the paper, well, we didn't have the funds to do it. So now you're telling me, you know, well, we had 30,000 people, but we didn't bother to look at all of them because of financial concerns, but we're going to make this very clear correlation and call this out in the media.
Right. Now, also, I mean, it was a little concerned, too, with the pronouncement that was made very soon after the study was released. I don't remember the name of the investigator, but you probably know it. The lead investigator came out and said, look, you know, he, in press interviews, he said, look, I studied a lot of these vitamins and supplements, and the bottom line is they don't work. And, you know, that, to me, was kind of a an intemperate thing for a researcher to say, based on a few sketchy conclusions. It's almost as if he had a bias or an agenda that, you know, he's trying to demonstrate that supplements were inefficacious.
It's interesting. And I've been asked that before, you know, who would be the mystery team behind this? I don't know about conspiracy per se. And what I find most interesting about fish oil is that it's in the food supply, so that there are people, you know, in the food, it's in the dietary supplement supply, but it's also in the RX category with, you know, there is a prescription fish oil. So, you know, globally, I don't think that there's groups that are, you know, trying to do this, but for an individual to make pronouncements outside the scope of his own published research is very, you know, can be troubling. You know, if there's data to support certain statements about the data that he has found, that's fine. But then to paint a brush across the entire industry from that one paper does not seem the right way to go.
And, you know, so among the critiques that I've seen of the study is what they measured was they measured the omega-3 fatty content, I guess, of red blood cells that have been frozen for several years. And the concern here is we don't know how that omega-3 content got there. It may be the result of people taking really high-quality fish oil and eating fresh Alaska sockeye salmon that costs, I don't know what it costs in Los Angeles, but here in New York that's upwards of $20 a pound if you're lucky. And it might be the result of consumption of poor-quality fish that's laden with PCBs, which we know can be cancer-causing, or maybe the result of people consuming discount fish oil capsules, you know, $9.99 for a bottle of 300, that may contain harmful residues.
Yeah, there's absolutely no, they never ask these men if they're taking anything at all. It could be simply exposure. You know, there's other sources of omega-3s, flaxseed and other types of seeds, walnuts, other things. It could be anything. And so, yes, to try to make conclusions from that is, I think, jumping the gun.
Okay. So now the other argument that was made, and I think it's a very valid argument, is I think it was the very self-same week that this study came out suggesting that fish oil was harmful for the prostate. I think a big study came out suggesting quite diametrically the opposite, that fish oil was protective for the prostate. We know that actually in other studies of the relationship between fish oil and cancer, fish oil usually has a protective effect, does it not?
It has been shown in prostate cancer in particular, in other areas, as it is a strong anti-inflammatory, you know, first and foremost. Secondly, you know, omega-3 fatty acids are essential fatty acids, which mean the body cannot produce it itself. You have to get them from an external source. And, you know, it's been shown, you know, very clearly in cardiovascular protection, in protection against certain arthritides, in protection of, you know, neuroprotection for cognitive function. So, and to focus in on the cancer area, prostate cancer in particular, there have been a study, I think it was 14,000 men, showed there was a protective effect, and epidemiological studies in Japan, where the natural baseline intake of fish is much higher than here, again, show lower rates of prostate cancer than other countries. Now, again, that's a correlation, and you sort of put all these correlations,
right.
But I don't think that there's been, you know, there's so much protective health information about omega-3 fatty acid that ultimately, my blanket recommendations are always, well, you know, you're an individual. You need to know your genetics, your diet, your lifestyle, your other diseases, your medications, whatever, what could be right for you. But if, you know, you're in a situation where you're at high risk for prostate cancer or high risk for a recurrence, I am not in any way convinced that, well, let's not even, you know, take the data more than it is. I'm not convinced that having a higher omega-3 level necessarily puts you at higher risk for actually getting prostate cancer, let alone trying to take it the step before that, which is the intake of fish or omega-3 supplements would do that.
Well, you know, in science generally, and, you know, you are a research scientist, you know that for a theory to really to take hold, there has to be objective evidence that there is either a risk or a benefit of something. And there also has to be a mechanism. There has to be an explanation. So, for example, when we talk about X-ray exposure, some studies are now showing that Americans get too much in the way of X-rays, CAT scans, you name it, you know, radionuclide studies with stress tests, and so on. And as a result, that somewhat, and studies have actually shown that depending on how many of these procedures you get, you have a slightly higher risk of developing cancer. Similarly, in people who've had you know, radiotherapy for cancer, you know, breast cancer or whatever, they have a slightly higher risk of cancer. But there's a mechanism there, and the mechanism we know from physics and biology that ionizing radiation causes mutations in cells, and that therefore that's going to damage the DNA, and then thus lead to mistakes, and then cancer can arise. Okay, so there we have a story that's complete. But, you know, when we look mechanistically at what fish oil does in the body, how could it be that fish oil causes cancer rather than protects cancer? Isn't all the mechanistic evidence that going against that?
Yeah, I did not see in the paper a hypothesis for a mechanism. I can't think of one. As I said, you know, as a anti-inflammatory first and foremost, you know, it reduces that risk. You know, there's part of cancer is, look, you have underlying cell mutations, as you alluded to. You have your immune system, which needs to survey for these precancerous cells and take them out as non-self. And I don't think that there's anything demonstrating that fish oil would have an immunosuppressive function either. So I'm stymied as to, you know, how that could happen.
Okay, so you have been an advocate for the use of fish oil, and, you know, based on the study, you know, no caution flags. You think people should continue? Is there good reason to continue using fish oil supplements for prevention of a variety of diseases?
I believe that the evidence does support that. Again, it's the totality of the evidence that has to be looked at. The newest study doesn't suddenly invalidate everything that came before, especially one that is not a prospective study, but rather a statistical correlate study only of, you know, blood from 10 years back, doesn't change the overall calculus in the risk-benefit ratio for omega-3 or fish oil. And so I would say that it becomes, you know, in the proper setting, definitely should be recommended for individuals who are looking to you know, reduce inflammation, protect themselves against the risk of certain diseases, and overall, you know, it's part of the overall lifestyle. Now, that being said, there's always the moderation side to this. You can, you know, you don't want to go overboard. You don't want to have too much fish. You don't want to have too much fish oil. You mentioned the issues of, you know, heavy metals and other things. And even in the cleanest of products, you can still go too far. So within moderation, and in conjunction with discussion with your physician or practitioner to make sure it fits within your overall picture.
Okay. So also, I mean, you know, you're obviously familiar with statistics and how statistics can be manipulated. According to some people who analyzed the study, there was a little bit of skullduggery when it came to, you know, trying to torture the data, so to speak, to present a case that was a little bit beyond what the data really had to say about that relationship. Did you look at that when you evaluated the study?
You know, they reported this in hazard ratios, and you know, they were consistent across the different grades of cancer. And in this, purely statistically, taking out all of the other factors of where the data came from, I don't think that statistically there were problems with this particular paper. It was the leap from this statistical correlate to the conclusions that have been made both in the paper and, as you have mentioned, outside of the realm of the paper itself that are probably not in line with the level of evidence.
Okay. So, you know, when it comes to prostate health, you know, in the press release that was sent to me, by your organization. I see it here now. In terms of prostate health, the one study here that it's fairly recent, 2003, data from 47,882 men participating in a 12-year study suggested men with a high consumption of fish and marine fatty acids had a lower risk of prostate cancer. That's from a respectable journal called Cancer Epidemiology.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly it. This study, this paper recently published, does not invalidate the data from before. So you have, you know, conflicting data, but that one was actually surveying what was the food, the fish and marine fatty acid intake. And that's an important distinction. They actually went to mention.
They actually asked the people.
What are you taking?
Yeah.
Yes. Whereas in this particular paper we're discussing now, they never asked them, so there's no way of concluding that.
So here's some general guidelines because, you know, I do a health show and our listeners are constantly bombarded with information, much of it contradictory. So, for example, you know, many studies in the past have shown that coffee is really bad, you know. So we had Sanka and we had decaf. And, you know, the idea is that Robert Young in commercials, if you're old enough to remember, used to tell us, calm down, decaffeinate your coffee and drink Sanka because the caffeine is bad for you. Now we have studies that suggest that coffee and even caffeinated coffee may be good for you, that there's not a cardiovascular risk whatsoever. That you can guzzle as much as you want, that it's helpful for, it protects your liver, it may be helpful for a wide variety of conditions, and don't worry about it. So what's the public to do when, you know, we're not, I mean, I at least, you know, I'm a medical doctor, and this is my beat as a medical journalist, but, you know, what do you make of this? I mean, you're probably used to contradictory studies in your field.
Yeah, it's you know, so how do you do it? There's a phrase used by the regulators, which is the totality of the evidence. And this is not at all an easy thing to do. You know, there is no one place to go for the best information on this. I think there are some groups that are trying to be, you know, a resource for this, like the Cochrane Collaboration, putting together, you know, analysis of the total evidence. And I wish there was, you know, the one resource that people could run to when a new study comes out and say, well, where does this fit in the totality? But that sort of analysis usually doesn't come until years later when the next round of the Cochrane Collaboration, for example, gets together on that particular topic and reviews it. You know, if you have two positive studies and a negative study, what does that mean? If you have one positive study and two harmful studies, what does that mean? And it's really, another big picture concept for this is that studies and statistical significance are based on averages and means, and they're helpful. They're helpful for us, you know, getting to the 95% confidence interval and looking at statistical significance. But that still is based on, you know, bell-shaped curve and means and averages and used for regulatory purposes. But as an individual, who are you, where do you fit in that, and what's the best thing that's right for you, you know, can be guided by these studies, but still has to be nuanced. So, you know, we were, I used to tell my patients, you know, when you look at a study, for example, that's published in a certain population, is it even applicable to you? Some of the earliest fish oil data was in, you know, Norwegian fishermen. Obviously made sense. They had access to a lot of it. Or Japanese population. How does that translate to, if that's fish consumption, how does that translate necessarily to omega-3 consumption in an inner city urban population? Mm-hmm. Is it the same? Is it different? These are all things, which is why I always go back to the individual. And for an individual, yes, it's a big job to try to think about, okay, what's right and what's not, but it's also your health. So I think that it's worth investing the time.
Well, also there are some studies that suggest that fish oil may be beneficial in terms of enhancing the cognitive abilities and IQs of children and older individuals, but only if they're not getting enough. And if they're already getting enough, it's kind of like bringing coals to Newcastle. You know, you already got enough. So that, you know, if a little is good, a lot is not better. It may be that some of these studies would show no benefit. It may be that that's because there's a subgroup where there is a benefit, but it's swamped by the overall group where it doesn't seem to make a difference.
That's true. And there's also something called a responders analysis. You know, in any particular therapy, by definition, a certain percentage of people will not respond. This happens in any pharmaceutical product as well as dietary supplement. Mm-hmm. And so, look, if statistically it didn't reach statistical significance, maybe it's because there weren't enough subjects in the study. The magnitude of the effect was not large enough. But what if I said, well, but 50% of the individuals saw a benefit? Does that mean it doesn't work? No, it means for a population as a whole, it didn't reach statistical significance. But it doesn't mean that some people didn't, let's take a weight loss,
right,
you know, example. Some people may have lost 10 or 20 pounds. But on the other side, because some people may have gained 10 or 20 pounds during the same time period, it washes out and you say, well, you know, on average, there was no benefit. But for those people who lost the weight, there was a real benefit. And so very often we'll do some subgroup analysis, as you're suggesting, either based on responders or based on removing outliers, two or three standard deviations away from the mean, and try to say, okay, but what does this really mean? And let's not negate the positive findings that are in there, but let's talk about them in the right context and say, okay, this applies to.
Right. So when it comes to some study, there was actually a recent study that looked at the efficacy of fish oil for preventing cardiovascular disease. And the study came out, you know, sort of negative. You know, say, well, it really wasn't beneficial. But when you looked at that study, what they were doing is they were given one fish oil pill to a bunch of people who already had heart disease. And the placebo was an olive oil capsule. Which in itself could have been helpful or preventive. And, you know, I also sometimes talk about something called, that I call, the Lazarus effect, which is that you can't bring Lazarus back from the dead, or you can if you're, you know, if you're the Savior and Jesus Christ incarnate. But, you know, somebody is very far gone with a disease state, say cancer or cardiovascular disease, and you give them, you know, one supplement at a modest dose for a short period of time, you may not see a benefit. You know, so there's a lot of things wrong with some, and then they draw very overarching conclusions. Okay, you know, headline, fish oil, not beneficial for heart disease.
Yeah, no, that's right in line with, you know, how these things can be interpreted or misinterpreted.
Okay, so the message to, you know, our listeners at the end of the day is that, you know, should I keep taking fish oil supplements? And the answer is a resounding yes. I mean, there's certain circumstances where, you know, you got to be careful. People who have bleeding disorders, you know, if you're about to undergo surgery, there's some people for whom it's not suitable. But for the vast majority of people, and particularly with regard to concern over prostate cancer, that doesn't seem to make a difference.
My interpretation of the data is that's correct, that you would still provide a greater benefit than the potential risk. And if you were particularly worried about prostate cancer, that the totality of the evidence still does not suggest that fish or fish oil consumption directly has been shown to increase that risk.
And if we look at, you know, other cancers, for example, one of the studies that you sent along in the prep piece that we're using for this broadcast, looking at 21 studies in women, high intake of omega-3 fatty acids was associated with a 14% reduction in the risk of breast cancer. So at least from the standpoint of proven benefit in other cancers, it's possible we may be able to extrapolate.
I think so. You know, again, these are epidemiologic, so it's fair. You know, it's fair to let's say temper the enthusiasm in both directions. Large epidemiologic studies show that these things are helpful, they fall on the side of benefit in these cases. But you as an individual, as you were describing, if you have particular risk factors which put you in a higher risk category, or you already have breast cancer, this may not apply in that particular setting. These are extrapolated across populations. And, you know, so in general, if you're looking for a rule of thumb, yes, fish oil appears to be beneficial. I, you know, don't want to repeat myself, but as an individual, your case has to be looked at specifically across all the variables that we've mentioned before.
Okay. So where can we get more information? You know, there are health professionals listening to the program about Medicus Research.
Our website is medicusresearch.com. That's M-E-D-I-C-U-S, research.com. We are a full-service contract research organization dedicated to the natural health products industry, and our role is running studies exactly like this and looking to validate the efficacy or not of certain products. We had just published timely a fish oil study less than a month ago, in which we demonstrated that fish oil had a beneficial effect on mood and well-being using the SF-12 scale, and that was in a population of people who had already been taking fish oil. So this was a newer type of fish oil, a stronger type, and across 150 people, we saw this benefit. So there are, you know, this is the type of stuff we publish. When you see a bottle of a product and it says clinically tested or clinically proven, you know, organizations, usually us, but over like ours, are the ones that are designing and running these studies. And, you know, it's very important that, you know, for health professionals making these recommendations, I would say when you look at natural products and you're looking at the ingredients, let's say you read a paper, XYZ does ABC, look for particular brands. So you want to know what brand was tested, because that brand testing will be associated with a particular extraction of the ingredient. Mm-hmm. There's no generics, you know.
Right.
St. John's Wort isn't St. John's.
Yeah, but when you're talking about Lipitor, you're talking about Lipitor. You know, basically it's a standardized, you know, formula. But, you know, when you're talking about, you know, for example, St. John's Wort, like in that instance, there's standardized, there's, you know, various qualities. There's the question of, you know, what's the source, what are the manufacturing standards, and, you know, a lot of that's important.
And the dose, very often a study will show a dose at a certain, you know, efficacy at a certain dose, but the bottles will contain a fraction of that dose.
Right, just almost for like product placement, you know, just sort of like, oh, wow, there's some St. John's Wort in there, but it may be at an inefficacious dose.
That's correct. And once again, I wish there was a single resource you could point to and say, okay, but always this brand or always this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't exist, but you know, again, if you as an individual or you as a practitioner are listening, you know, and you go through it, if you can find the brands that were actually the ones tested, or, you know, there are certain brands that keep that information inside, and you can contact the company and say, hey, look, what's your substantiation behind this particular formulation or ingredient?
So what do you say, you know, you go to, you know, cocktail parties and, you know, with the doctors, and, you know, sometimes you'll find yourself in a room with, you know, urologists and surgeons and ophthalmologists and internists and endocrinologists, and they'll say, you know, what do you do? And you'll talk about, you know, your work with the natural products industry. And the comment often is, well, you know, but there aren't any studies on these things. I mean, if they were so beneficial, at least there would be some studies. How do you react when you're so involved in actually completing these studies? I think there's an ignorance by the medical profession that, you know, while some products are a little bit fly by night, the vast majority of supplements that are now purveyed are subject to rigorous science and research.
They are, and you know, there are. resources that, especially for professionals, databases where they can look up the evidence behind this. And it's challenging because there are not generic equivalents. There are not FDA mandates for pre-market approval to lead to this. The flip side is data is showing that now almost one-third of primary care practitioners are not only recommending herbal and supplement products, but selling them. So I think that the barriers to a lot of this are diminishing. There are certain specialties in addition to primary care. I know that orthopedics, OB-GYN, dermatology, these groups really do a lot with supplements and have started selling them in their practice. One is a service to their patients. Two is, you know, revenue filler and to some degree. But, you know, the prime resistance to dietary supplements vanished over the last decade. When I started this, you know, it really was, you know, very, very out there and strange, if you will. And I know you've been in this even longer than I have, so I'm sure you remember those times.
Yeah, but, yeah, we were real outlaws and renegades in those days.
Yeah, I'll share a quick story. I was chief resident at Cedars Sinai, and the next month I became, you know, July 1, switched over to the first fellow in integrative medicine and gave grand rounds on something related to integrative medicine. And you know, the daggers and the tomatoes thrown were pretty bad.
What year was that, by the way?
I can't remember. I think 98.
Okay.
But the flip side was then after the presentation, a bunch of them even came up to me then and said, okay, look, I've got this thing. What should I take?
Right. So yeah. I mean, when it comes to their own health or when it comes to, you know, their wife, or their child, that's when you can sometimes, you know, breach the skepticism and, doctors take an interest.
That's right.
All right. Well, okay. Fantastic. Look, it's great having guys like you doing this kind of work on behalf of the natural products industry, because clearly, you know, you're going to take a very objective, scientific, and ethical approach to research and proper evaluation of some of the supplements that we rely on. And, you know, we're going to call them as we see them. You know, if something doesn't work, I'm sure you'd be the first one to point it out. On the other hand, if studies come out that are misleading, you're also going to be at the forefront of pointing out the flaws in those studies. So thanks for being out there, and thanks for your great work. And congratulations on your pioneering work out there at Cedars-Sinai.
Thank you so much.
That was Dr. Jay Udani. Thanks very much for joining us, folks. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.